in many ways, it was one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had, because when Todd Day learned to write his name, and I carried it home with him and dropped him off at the store where his father worked. His father was out there pumping gas there at the grocery store across from the school. I showed him Todd had written his name, and big old tears ran in his face. You know, and so I look back on those days. I was not a trained special ed teacher, but it was an experience, and I'll always be grateful for it. But I taught that semester in the summer. We got a federal grant for the summer, and then in August of that year, we moved to New Orleans, where my husband went to seminary, and they were able to get a special ed teacher. And today in Cherokee County, well, for many years, special education in Cherokee County was called the D-Day School. I think now it's been moved to vocational school, but it was named after Miss Day. The program still continues today. That was my first teaching experience. And when we moved to New Orleans, I taught at a school that was kindergarten through eighth grade. And I taught fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grades. All boys. The parish I taught in was the one next door to Orleans Parish. It was called St. Bernard Parish. And their solution to the problem of integration, this is 1970. This is in the fall of 70. And their solution to the problem of integration was put all the boys in one school and all the girls in another school from fourth grade on up. So in that parish, you had a school that was all girls, high school that was all girls, and you had a high school that was all boys. The races were mixed, but the sexes weren't mixed. And if you think teaching is an experience, try teaching a classroom full of fifth through eighth grade boys only. Mm-hmm. You do see that girls do have a civilizing effect to some extent. But not only was that a situation, in fact, I had very few black students in there, but I had many Cajun, French descent children. It was all boys, as I said. I had many that had Italian background.
Were they considered minorities?
Not in New Orleans. In New Orleans, the Italians and the French and all. But I mean, to some extent, but I'm trying to think. I may have had a black student or two, but if I did, they were very few. But it was all boys, and it was grades fifth through eighth. And they had just adopted this new, one of the many educational philosophies that have flown around this country in the last 50 years of individualized instruction, which sounds beautiful on paper but seldom works in real life classrooms, especially with junior high boys. But their idea was that you had a list of skills that you taught in language arts, and you grouped children not by grade or age but by where they were in their development of language skills. But every individual was on a totally separate program, and ideally it was set up, every child had a learning folder, and he would come into the classroom and get his folder, and he would go through and work the worksheets, and when he thought he was ready for a test, he would tell you that he was ready for the test, and you would give him the test and grade it, and then he would move on to the next skill. No two students in the room were ever doing the same thing at the same time. The teacher, you know, did not, it was, and as I said, it sounded great on
paper. How long did it take that fall apart?
I don't know. I taught there 2.5 years. but it was just a phase that we went through. And as I said, it sounds great on paper, but, you know, I look back on it now, and it's a good thing I was young and much more energetic and had much more patience than I do now, because I would not survive trying to teach in that situation now. And I taught there 2.5 years, and then I went, the last year we were in New Orleans, I taught at another parish across, it was on the opposite side of the river, Jefferson Parish, and I taught at a junior high school there where I did have, it was probably about 60% white, 40% black. I did have black students there. And they had a somewhat individualized program too, but what they'd done was track students. And I had all sixth grade. I taught only sixth grade, but there were 13 groups in the sixth grade. So the 6-1s were all of your very brightest students, and they were a joy teaching. Being a new teacher, I didn't have those. I think the highest group I had was the six. I think the highest group I had was the 6'8" who would probably be very. They were really below average, I suppose. But the 6'13"s were the real jolts. If I got them all out of the hallway, corralled, stopped chasing each other around the room, and seated in a desk, by the time the bell rang, I thought I had accomplished some great things that day. And if I had to write down my objective for every day in that classroom, those classrooms, it would be survival. Just live through this day. And that would be my number one objective. And, of course, not only was the whole situation bad, there was no discipline in the school. Many of the children came from very disadvantaged backgrounds. And the building we taught in was terrible. I taught in one of the buildings that was separated from the main building. And when it rained, we would have water standing in the floor 2 or 3 inches deep. Many days I taught in a building, I taught in a room that had water standing in the floor and in the halls and no heat in the building.
What was the administration like? Were they supportive? Or was it
at that school, no. At the one in St. Bernard, the administration was, I had a very supportive administrator. The principal there was very, very good administrator, and I felt, you know, I felt a lot of support from the administration there. And but in the Jefferson County, or Jefferson Parish, at that particular school, it was probably one of the worst schools in the parish.
It was really weak.
It was very bad, yes. And when we left New Orleans in March of 1974, we moved back to Birmingham, Alabama. My husband pastored a church in Birmingham for the next 5 years. Fahrenheit. And so at that point I did not intend to teach for a while. Our oldest daughter was 4 years old and we wanted to have other children, of course. And when we moved back to Birmingham, we assumed we could live on the salary my husband was making, which was a fairly good salary as minister salaries go. But when we left New Orleans, the price of gasoline was 25 cents a gallon, and within a year it had gone to a dollar a gallon. And the price of groceries had doubled. That was when inflation really hit. That was in the early 70s. And the cost of living became so great that I knew I had to go back to work. But I did become pregnant and have our second daughter. She was born in April of 74. And I started trying to get a teaching certificate. I mean, to get a teaching position in Birmingham then. And I couldn't get one. That fall, I worked in an office. So when the next summer came, the summer of 75, I had my application in with the Jefferson County Board of Education, the Birmingham Board of Education, and all. And after several weeks, when I would call maybe once a week, and they said, no, we don't have anything for you. And someone told me that the only way you'll get a job is you simply have to bug them to death. You have to make sure your application stays on the top of the stack. And so every day I called the Birmingham Board of Education. Sometimes it would take me 2 hours to get through the switchboard. I got continual busy signals. In those days we didn't have telephones, had redial them. So you had to redial it. But I would get through every day. And that lady finally got so tired of me calling. But I still did not get a job until school had been started 2 or 3 weeks. And they called, and they in Birmingham they level out the classes, and so after school starts and students enroll, then they see if they need extra teachers. And so she called and asked me if I'd be interested in a job at Hayes High School. I think now in Birmingham it's a junior high, but at that time it was a high school, and it's over on the north side of Birmingham. We lived on the west side. And I told her, I said, well, I would prefer a school closer to home, but if that's all that's available, yes, I want the job. So I went and interviewed for that job, and that school at that time was 100% black. But at that time in Birmingham, every school in the Birmingham system, it made no difference what the makeup of the school was, the faculty had to be 50% white, 50% black. Every school in Birmingham. And so they could only hire a white teacher, so that was my advantage. And so I got a job there teaching English, and I taught one class of history. And I taught 9th grade English and 11th grade English and 11th grade history. And I taught there for 1 year. Dr. Mm-hmm. John Norman was the principal. Well, I told Mr. Norman when I interviewed with him, he was a black man, but a very distinguished black man, one of the most impressive people I've ever known. Mm-hmm. He was an excellent administrator. He kept excellent order in the teachers and students. We teachers were as afraid of him as the students were. And in many ways, he opened my eyes to different aspects of education, I guess you'd say. I had never, of course, worked for a black person, and I had never even worked with black teachers to any great extent. In Louisiana, we had one or two of them, but they weren't any. I never taught a school where the great predominance of them. But there at Hayes, half of us were black and half of us white. And some of the best teachers I've ever taught with in my life were there at that school. And then at West End High School, where I transferred.
Do you feel like that was a positive experience?
Yes. I have often made this statement to my classes. I've told this to friends and relatives, and I've told this to fellow educators. I grew up in Michigan, so I may not have been initially as prejudiced as most people who are born in the South are. But I did move back to Alabama as a high school 9th grade student. And I went to a all-white high school in a little town on Sand Mountain, Belez, Alabama. And, of course, that your teenage years are very influential. They're very, many of you views about life and all are formed, or they begin to be defined during that time period. And so I, even though I had been exposed and had had many black friends in Michigan, I quickly picked up the typical attitude of prejudice. And because that was what my friends, they would make the comments, and I wouldn't make the comments myself, but I didn't stand up and say, hey, you're wrong, that you should not use those kind of words, you should not say those things, or I know black people who are just as nice and friendly as you are. But that was a typical teenage thing, wouldn't fit in with everyone. And of course, my husband was raised in a totally integrated society. He'd never even, been exposed to. He was raised in a segregated society, rather. He'd never been exposed to integration, probably in any form, until the 60s began. And so when we married and moved to Birmingham, while he was in college and I worked at a transportation company in Birmingham during this time, that's when all the marches and all were going on in Birmingham. We lived right in Birmingham. In fact, on our way to church, we lived on the south side of town, and we went to church over on the west side of town, and we drove down 6th Avenue South every day on the way to church. And we lived in Birmingham in an apartment on the south side of Birmingham during the days of the civil rights demonstrations and all going on in Birmingham during the 60s.
Were you careful? Were you careful during that time?
Now remember, I'm an 18-year-old, newlywed, young wife. And having been gone to school in Alabama and all, I had I was very much the typical, I guess, Alabamian at that time, even though I had been raised in Michigan to some extent. But we would watch the newscast on TV, and Bull Connor was the police commissioner. Bull Connor was the police commissioner in Birmingham at the time. And I am totally embarrassed to say this now, and I look back upon this and say, it's hard for me to believe I was ever this ignorant. But being a product of my environment, I suppose, at the time all of that was going on, we would watch the news at night and go, Bull, go. That was what y'all did. Turn those horses loose. Turn those dogs loose. They need to get back where they belong. And, that I'm sorry to say, was naive. And I'm very embarrassed and very remorseful that I ever had those kind of attitudes. But it was not because I was a bad person. I was a Christian at that time. I'm still a Christian, but that certainly was not Christian behavior. But I was simply looking at it from the viewpoint of a young, white woman living in Birmingham, Alabama at that time, having been raised by Southern parents and exposed to the Southern prejudice, and even my living in Michigan and having gone to school. But to me, that was almost like two totally separate groups. Well, those were a few black students up there, but here in the South, it was different. Well, I don't know. But in defense of Southern people, I will say this. Many Northerners have always put down Southerners and said, that we were terrible people because of our attitudes and so forth. But I personally, and even to believe there's as much prejudice in the North as there is in the South. I have a brother-in-law who was raised in the North, never has lived in the South, looks down upon the South even today. But right now, I guarantee you, he is much more prejudiced and he is not only against blacks, but against Polish and other racial groups. He is much more prejudiced right now, I believe, than I am. And it comes out. He expresses. He's a sweet, sensitive man, and I love him to death. But he's very prejudiced, and he does not hesitate to express his prejudices. And so I simply think that a lot of the problems the South encountered was because we had more black people living in the South. There were many more black people living in the South at the time, and I think the Southern people viewed them as a threat more. Mm-hmm. In the North, because the black population was a much smaller group, maybe 10%. The white people, I don't think, viewed them as a threat. But in the South, I think, especially the uneducated white people, especially those on the lower socioeconomic rung, they viewed, because they competed for the same jobs and so forth, and I think they really viewed them as a threat. If they were given the same privileges they were, that they would be competing. They would be competing with them for jobs and for everything else. And I think that probably is one reason that we had more problems than the North did. But I don't think, as a group, Southerners are any more prejudiced than any other region of the country.